This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, things are moving fast at the Oregon State Legislature. A lot going on. We're checking in with State Representative Virgil Osborne. The House not in session yet on Friday, so he is back in the building with us to talk about what's going on. Sounds like a busy week in Salem.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, thanks again for having me. And it has been really, really crazy. A lot to talk about. Hey, but first, before we start, I wanted to give a shout out to Tina and Amy down at Head Start here in Green, their little new facility they have. I spent the morning down there. I got to read some dinosaur books to the kids and high five each of the kids and tour their facility. And the Head Start program is just incredible for our community, and I fully support it in my office. All their funding requests have been coming through us, and we're just really happy that they're part of our community.
So where are they at in Green?
They're right there where the old, kind of by the right behind the Subway sandwich place.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty neat thing. And what they do for the kids is just, I mean, that's what this is all about. I mean, you got to take care of the kids, and I'm just happy I can help with that.
All right, we're going to roll through a lot of different things. I wanted to start out, I know you did some conversations with the News Review earlier on this. Talk about the Roseburg Urban Growth Boundary. We mentioned it last week, and the legislation that I guess you've put out regarding that.
Yeah, absolutely. So House Bill 3921, I believe, is the number on it. And what it does is, we are out of places to build houses, and literally Douglas County has a real problem with that because a lot of our lands within Roseburg area anyway are in the, they have issues with the wetlands, so you can't build on them anyway. But we're literally out of places to build many houses in the city of Roseburg within the urban growth boundary. Well, it turns out, and I didn't know this, but until I was approached about it, but it turns out there was a large tract of land that currently is in the urban growth boundary that can't be built on because it's all hillside and steep. And then evidently they wanted to do a land swap, which would have given them the ability at some point in the future to develop an area that was very much more suited for building. And that would have been Charter Oaks, I think is the name of it. But it just made sense. And I know that they've been trying to do it. They've had, they've all but got permission to do it, but there was an appeal, and the appeals kind of take forever. I was approached by some folks from the city to work on this, and I looked into some of the other factors, and McMinnville took them 26 years to do this developing. So anyway, we ran the bill. So far, it has been in committee, had a real good response on the hearing, and we'll see if we can get it through committee and out into the House floor.
So would this be, that legislation would be specifically for this situation then?
It would, yes. And it does not mean that the area will be developed necessarily. It doesn't mean that it'll be annexed. It would just put the urban growth boundary into an area that's actually developable. And the fact is, the governor says we need 36,000 homes a year built, and we're not even close to that. We're having a hard time finding places for people to live within our area. That we try to bring in people for the hospital, for some of our other larger businesses, and there's just no housing available.
Well, I'm kind of like a geeky real estate observer, and I watch a lot of things around the community, and you see homes occasionally, one here or there, being put into Hewcrest on lots that hadn't gotten developed. But a lot of people end up on steeper areas, and suddenly your, say, $400,000 house becomes a lot more expensive just because of the development cost of dealing with, whatever you have to do to make it safe and sturdy to be there on a, hilly area, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it just pretty much makes it undevelopable. I mean, the price, the cost of doing it becomes, exceeds the ability to do it and the value of the home. So we need developable land, and it needs to happen, pretty darn soon.
Well, and of course, one of the things we're dealing with here is a geography issue. I was trying to think earlier about other areas in Oregon that have developed much more quickly over the years. And as I really thought about it, one of the aspects is, while they do have hills and all of that, they're not kind of locked in like we are in Roseburg here. They have a lot of wide open spaces adjoining them. So communities that used to be the size we are now are suddenly, well, not suddenly, but over time, much bigger, and we're able to develop because they didn't have the challenges that we've got here with just all the hills and then the river placement and where you have the VA and everything else, it really has made it a very limiting factor.
It does, and it hurts in time. I mean, our community can't grow and thrive, and it makes other communities more desirable for people to move to. And we need those professional folks to come here, want to live here, want to raise their families here, and want to do business here. It's good for the entire community.
Now, last night or early this morning, saw a release from a couple of the Republican leaders in the House regarding the Oregon Department of Transportation package. Talk more about what's been proposed there.
Yeah, thanks. I saw that yesterday. It came out, and it's a guidelines, basically an outline for their transportation package. Frankly, my first read on it was it just made me sick. And I'll be honest with you, we have had 30 years of one-party rule in this state, and now we're finally getting to the point where they are going to have to pay for all of those things that they have done. And, you know, I'll just start out with it's a $1.9 billion ask, and this is to save ODOT. What's included in that so far, and there's a lot more detail, but I'll give you some of the highlights. They want to raise the payroll tax, and it's a fairly significant increase from 0.08 to add a whole point to it. I think it ends up being 0.18 increase in payroll tax. That's going to affect everybody in the state. We're all going to feel that. They want to increase the gas tax by 20 cents a gallon, which, again, we're having trouble in this state. People are having trouble making ends meet, you know, where they're at, but we're going to increase the price of gas. They are going to increase the DMV fees by $90 for registering your car. They want to raise the weight mile tax on trucks 16.9%. which means all of your goods going to all of your stores is going to be more expensive. Shipping rates are going to go up. They want to add a new tax that taxes new cars. It's a 1% tax on cars. So if you go down and buy a new car, you already pay a lot of taxes and fees as it is. They're going to add to that. They want to also, they want a 3% tire tax. This is not the same tax that we talked about last time I was here. This is a new tax on top of that. They want to add 3% tire tax to help pay for ODOT. And then they also want to have an EV, electric vehicle road use charge, and a delivery vehicle charge, which is going to raise your shipping prices on all of your Amazon and everything else. I mean, and the list just goes on and on and on. I mean, it really makes me sick to my stomach. And I really feel for those of us who are not super wealthy, because we're going to be the ones that are going to be footing this bill to pay for negligence and management of a program.
Do you feel like all these different kind of mixing of taxes are all out there in the hopes that they'll get some of them? Or is it a bill where you say yes to everything or no to everything?
Well, I think this is not a bill yet. This is a guide. This is an outline. It will turn into a bill as they negotiate, but they couldn't negotiate until they finally came out and told the rest of us what it was they wanted to do. They've been keeping this a secret now. This should have been out a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, but they've been keeping it a secret because they know that it's going to be an absolute disaster for our economy and for our state. Now it's out. They had to at some point. I mean, we're halfway through session. At some point, they're going to have to face it, and now they have it out to face. I should add, Kyle, they're also adding to this a bicycle tax, if you can believe that. I didn't even realize there was a $15 per bike tax on a new bike that's over $200 now. They're going to increase that by $9.50 per bicycle that's bought. I mean, I have never, frankly, seen anything quite this crazy in the 3 years I've been in the legislature. I've seen some really bad stuff, but I just call this insane. I call this, the majority party is going to own this, every bit of it.
Now, I was thinking about the DMV taxes. We used to have one of the lowest rates in the country. It's crept up over time. I don't remember where we are now. But when I bought my car recently, I realized that things had gone up quite a bit in prices. And you think about a tax on new cars, that could impact what people decide to buy. I mean, a lot of new cars right now, around $40,000. If you get an extra $400, maybe you want to pay that, maybe you don't. So maybe you get a different car that costs less.
Yeah, it will affect markets everywhere. I mean, you know, that's probably the one tax that won't affect folks that are on the lower income scale, because you don't have a lot of lower income folks buying brand new cars. But Ultimately, these costs all get trickled down, and we all end up paying for them, and we pay for them in places like the market when the trucks that are delivering the food cost more to get the food there. You know, they don't seem to understand that when you have to go, when they go to Safeway to buy their steak, a truck brought that there. And, you know, it's going to cost more to bring their steak there. It's not like it's just grown at the store.
All right, we're going to talk more when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com with State Representative Virgil Osborne on Inside Douglas County from News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247. State Representative Virgil Osborne in studio, live from Salem on Monday. State Senator David Brock Smith. We cover a lot with what's going on in the Oregon State Legislature. I think we've got more topics that we're going to get through today. What do you want to talk about next?
Well, let's talk about a few bad bills, Kyle. Aside from the transportation package, actually, there are other things that are happening right now. I've had several people call my office concerned about water wells and fees on wells. House Bill 2808 actually increases some of those fees on inhibits your ability to build to drill a well. And I thought we had most of those bad bills killed, and I think we have done a good job in killing those bills. But 2808 got through, and I don't think it has been scheduled to go to the floor yet. But if anybody wants to look that up, it's a bad bill. House Bill 3884 is another firearms restriction bill, which is requiring the Department of State Police to study whether firearm hold agreements reduce firearm risks, which they're just throwing every single thing they can throw at us to try to take away our Second Amendment rights. The other thing is another tax, House Bill 3197, which is still very much alive, and it's a beer and wine tax. They want to tax your drinks, and we're currently fighting that one as well. And then, of course, they have now House Bill 3054, which is a rent increase cap. So they want to stop you from being able to be profitable as a landlord and try to convince you to sell your home, and which will not help nobody. So anyway, these are just a tasting of some of the bad stuff that we deal with almost daily. Now, a couple of good things. There is House Bill 83. Senate Bill 83. That's bad in a way because the Senate... the majority leaders decided they didn't want to hear our House Bill 3944, which was the wildfire repeal map bill. And they're going to give the senator that created the wildfire maps and all of this disaster, his Senate Bill 83, the ability to go through is what it sounds like. They're going to skip us. Now, the good news is our Senator, David Brocksmith, has gone into that bill and made some amendments, and they have agreed to most of those amendments. So the wildfire map repeal bill, I believe, will clear the Senate floor and will come to the House, and it is a good bill. So that'll be good for Southern Oregon, especially. Let's see what else. There are some other bills. I heard a bill this week which was interesting, and that was presented by Vicki Breese Iverson, and that was have the state lands take over the Ochoco Forest, which is, I think, 850,000 acres. Take it away from the feds and actually start using it as, logging it and using it as a resource. And they actually got a hearing, and it was pretty darn interesting. So we'll see where that goes. I don't know if it'll get a work session or not, but people seem to be interested in that. So that could set a precedence that would be good for the whole state. Anyway, the list just goes on. I mean, there's there's a heck of a lot more bad than there is good. So far, as of a week ago, the amount of bills that have cleared and been signed by the governor, 20% of them have been Republican bills, 30% of them have been Democrat bills, and 48% of them are agency bills, which means our governor has herself been the best legislator in the state. She has cleared 48% of all of the legislation on her own.
Now, last week we talked a lot about gun legislation, and you shared a lot of your concerns there. What's the kind of an update on where those stand right now?
So there was, Senator Brock Smith has been working in the background on the gun bills very hard. I'm really proud of the work he's doing. And they're trying to amend out some of the really bad stuff out of some of the bills. 3075 and 3076 are going to end up in Ways and Means, which is hopefully will kill them. And I don't want to go into all the amendments that are happening right now, because some of that stuff, I think there's a lot of negotiation happening that could make the bills better. Not those, but the Senate Bill 243, which is the ultimate worst gun bill ever, pretty much takes your gun rights away from you. We'll see where that heads, but I think hopefully amended, we may be able to kill some of the bad stuff. The rest of it hopefully will go to the Supreme Court and be found unconstitutional. Frankly, it costs the state millions and millions of dollars to defend these unconstitutional bills. I don't know why we are allowing our legislators to do it. I think our legislators should be held liable for the cost.
What about legislation particularly impacting Douglas County?
Of course, the urban growth boundary bill was one that I think we'll see come through. The well bill that we talked about, increase in well fees, that's another one that could certainly impact. Other than that, I think the taxes are going to impact Douglas County quite a bit. There's not a lot of direct bills that are going to going to Douglas County. Most of it's rural Oregon, particularly the wildfire mapping. There's also a wildfire funding bill that's coming through as well. They're trying to find a way to do that. We heard some of that this week, and one of the ways they want to fund that is to add a 5 cents a bottle redemption fee. Actually, it won't be a redemption fee. It's a tax, 5 cents a bottle tax to help pay for wildfire funding. Well, the reality of it is all we need to do is start logging our forests and take care of them again and actually selling the timber, and we would actually have plenty of money to fight wildfires, but we wouldn't have the wildfires because we would be managing our forests. So which comes first?
Have you heard anything in terms of it impacting the state, what the Trump administration put out regarding changes in policy for getting into the forest?
Yes, I've heard some. I think that our commissioners, Commissioner Freeman particularly, has been involved in that more than anybody. And my stance on that is I think the state's best, at least from a legislator standpoint, I think it's best to stand back and let the counties deal with that and see where that goes, because I don't think anybody does timber better than Douglas County does. And frankly, our Commissioner Freeman probably knows more about timber than anybody else around.
What about, and I really heard this more probably from the Senate side, the idea, which has been done before and gets very controversial, that in the midst of all of this, that one chamber or the other should simply exit the building and walk out.
Yeah, of course, we get lots of emails, particularly our leader got last week has had over 400 emails from people just asking, not even asking, demanding a walkout. We have right now, we are dealing with almost the identical gun bills that we dealt with in 2023 when I was first elected. So walking out does not stop gun bills, and walking out will stop progress on some bad bills, but it'll also stop a lot of progress on good bills. The other side of walking out is when the Senate walked out, it cost them one seat. The Senate's only 30 folks, so you ended up with down one in the Senate. If the House walks out, we lost the seat last term. If we walk out, 24 of us lose our seats. We know for a fact that we will not get 24 back. We will be lucky to get 18 or 19 back. Once we drop below the 20 threshold, frankly, the Democrats don't even need us to be around. They can conduct business without us. All of that said, the governor can call a special session and put us right back in session right after we've been deemed not eligible to run again. We'll end up back in Salem passing bills anyway. So at some point, the common sense says you have to stay and fight. As much as I would love to walk out, if we all walk away from our positions and our jobs and our responsibilities, then the state's going to run without us, and there will be nobody there to fight for you.
And what kind of reaction are you hearing? You said a lot of people have been asking for that. What do some of the lawmakers think?
You know, nobody's ruling it out yet. We have had discussions about it, but at the end of the day, I think we all pretty much feel the same way, and that is we were doing this in 23, we were going to do it in 25. Walkout does not stop bad policy bills. It just pushes it down the road. And in some cases, you get up against the wall and you can't stop it. If we're not careful and we do walk out, we will end up with enough seats lost that they won't need us to pass their bad bills. So we could be looking at 26 or 28 with 40 Democrats and 20 or less Republicans, and they just pass whatever gun bill they want. So at some point, you either have to stand and fight, or you walk away from the whole thing and you lose it all. Frankly, I'm not ready to lose this state yet. I think I got a lot of fight left in me.
And do you feel like the pace of the session that you're going to get through everything that people want to address by the deadline?
I'm glad you asked that. So, as a matter of fact, this week, if you watch sessions online, and I encourage everybody to do that, you can watch what we do every day. Everything is transparent. We shut the House down. So we went on the House floor. We demanded they read bills, and they flipped the actual bill. The way we had the bills set up to read, they actually flipped them upside down, read the Senate bills first, which was fantastic because the first Senate bill to be read was 34 pages long. Once I denied them the ability to run the bill without reading, which that's as a whip of the House, that's my responsibility. Once I denied that, they ended up reading bills for 2 hours and 10 minutes and did not do anything the entire day. So we are going to put this thing in low gear. We are going to fight back. We are going to use every single leverage we can to stop the gun bills and the tax bills. That's what we do, and that's why we're there.
Now, when you do that, does everybody have to remain on the floor?
We have to have a quorum on the floor. You have to have 40 people on the floor when they're reading bills. So some people leave, some people come back. But at any time, I can do a call of the House. And when I do a call of the House, doesn't matter where you are. If you're in the building, you have to come back. And, of course, nobody wants to be interrupted in their office. Literally, the police go after you, and they will bring you back to the House floor because the call of the House demands you come back. Or you're an absentee, and you only get 10, and then you're out.
Now, how does this, is this like a giant text that goes out, or how do you do that?
No, there's a procedure for call of the House. It's literally done manually. The sergeant at arms of the House will go to floor by floor in the House, and they will go office to office, and they will tell you there's a call of the House, and you will come back, and you don't have a choice. We don't necessarily do that, but when we get into a bill situation where it's pretty controversial and we want every Democrat there to vote on it, we will do a call of the House, and they have to come back to vote.
All right. Sounds like a lot going on. We'll check in more next week. State Representative Virgil Osborne, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Kyle. Take care.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.